This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehius Muhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is the first time ever when abducted victims have been returned, all of them with no single one injured or killed.
That's Abdul Labaran Malumfashi, spokesperson for the governor of Nigeria's Katsina State, where hundreds of kidnapped boys have been freed. Details coming up also. Today is International Migrants Day. And the UN is appealing for millions of dollars in urgent life-saving assistance for people affected in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigerian officials say more than 340 schoolboys kidnapped a week ago in the northwestern Nigerian state have been freed, although it's not clear if all those taken were released. In a Twitter post, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said, quote, "This is a huge relief to the entire country and international community." He also said the entire country is grateful to Katsina State Governor Aminu Bello Masari, the intelligence agencies, the military, and the police force. Many of the boys wearing light green uniforms, clutching blankets, arrived in the state capital Katsina Friday on buses, looking weary, but otherwise well. None of the boys spoke as they walked from the buses, flanked by soldiers, into a government building. A group of their parents waited to be reunited with them in another part of the town. The militant group, Boko Haram, said it was responsible for the kidnappings, but that could not be verified. The mass abduction has increased pressure on the government to deal with militants in the north of the country, particularly on Buhari, who hails from Katsina and has repeatedly said that Boko Haram has been technically defeated. VOA's Vincent McCorry spoke with Sunny Malamafushi, VOA House of Service reporter, who has been covering the story. This is what Sunny had to report.
The state government has secured the release of its abducted students, numbering 344. The governor said the release was facilitated by a committee the government set up, which comprises the heads of the police, army, other security outfits, the special advisor to the governor on security matters, who is standing on the government side, and the national officials of Miyet Allah, a cattle rearers association in Nigeria. The committee really worked tirelessly, and they have secured the release, and all the students are by now in Katsina. They were driven out with heavy military and security escort right from Zamfara Bush to Katsina. In an interview, the governor said all the students abducted have been released to the state government through the committee. And therefore, we cannot challenge that. But definitely there may be some still roaming about in the bush, those who had earlier run away for their dear lives and they lost bearing as to how they can locate the way back to their school or to their respective homes.
A top official of the Katsina State Government in northwest Nigeria says there is a great sense of relief with the release of 340 secondary school students abducted on December 11th. Abdul Labaran Malumfashi is the Director General for Media to the Katsina State Governor. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the release of the students.
344 were freed, and that is the total number of the abducted children.
Who facilitated the release of the students? Do you know if any ransom was paid?
It was this Makban, Miyet Allah Cattle Breeders Association, that were the go-between for the negotiation. The government spoke through the Macban, and the Macban spoke to the bandits. So that is, they were the middle people in the negotiation.
What's the reaction of the Katsina state government? And we also understand that President Muhammadu Buhari will meet the students later in the day. Your reaction?
Well, the reaction of the Katsina state government is only to be expected. I mean, extreme joy. This is the first time ever when abducted victims have been returned, all of them with no single one injured or killed. So, like I said, everybody is overjoyed with their safe return, especially the governor, whose main responsibility it is to guarantee security of life and property, and he was under tremendous pressure throughout the period they were in detention. But now, thank God, they are free. Everybody feels a sense of relief. Yes, there is joy all over the place.
The free children are now at a hotel where they are being attended by medical personnel. Around 3 to 3:30, the President Muhammadu Buhari will visit them before he flies back to Abuja later in the day. So that is about it for now.
That was Abdu Labran Malumfashi, the chief media officer for the Katsina state governor. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Katsina, Nigeria. The coronavirus pandemic has affected people worldwide, including migrants, many of whom have gotten ill, lost jobs, or been stranded in destination countries. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir spoke with the head of the UN's migration agency about their predicament.
There are about 272 million migrants worldwide. A little less than half of them are women. The UN considers a migrant to be anyone who changes their country regardless of the reason, but most move to seek economic improvement. According to the IOM, India has the largest number of migrants living abroad, more than 17 million. The United States remains the top destination country, home to more than 50 million migrants. Some 3 million migrants have been stranded by COVID-19 lockdowns and border closures, but the virus has not stopped the criminals who exploit those seeking to reach new countries. Antonio Vitorino is the director general of the UN's Migration Agency.
There are 4 times more arrivals in Italy this year through the Mediterranean, one of the most dangerous routes, than last year. Or if you look to the Gulf of Aden, there are 130,000 people who are crossing the Gulf both ways to reach the Gulf countries, and they did not stop because of the pandemic.
More than 3,100 migrants have died trying to reach destination countries this year. Drowning is the most common cause. As some rich nations approve COVID-19 vaccines and begin vaccinating their populations, Vitorino says migrants must not be excluded.
It's the responsibility of governments to guarantee that all that are present in their own territory, whether they are nationals or non-nationals, migrants, irrespective of their legal status, have access to vaccines. Because in practical terms, the pandemic has shown us that nobody is safe until everyone is safe.
International Migrants Day is a time to recognize migrants' contributions to the countries they settle in and respect their right to seek a better life, says the IOM.
Migration is a natural phenomenon of human life. It has always existed and it will go on existing in our world.
Migrants are often thought of as being undocumented workers, but the vast majority are legally in destination countries. They work in all fields, from manual labor to specialties, including healthcare and technology. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
This year has seen a dramatic increase in the number of African migrants trying to reach Europe through Senegal, including several shipwrecks that have left hundreds dead. A Senegalese group working with street children explains the dangers of illegal immigration and provides skills training to keep them employed at home. Reporter Alison Lekogo Fernandez has our story, presented by Carol Gunzenberg.
Mohammed Kaba has been living in the city of Chess for the last 2 months. Originally from Conakry in Guinea, he works as a security guard for a company specializing in renewable energy. His dreams of reaching Europe crashed when he was attacked in Mauritania and lost nearly $1,000 he had saved for the trip.
If I had invested the money I saved, today I know very well that I will be better off. Then I just wanted to quit my job and go try my luck. Today I regret it. If I had another chance, I would not go back to that hell.
Back in Senegal, Kaba turned to the group that helped him when he was a teenager on the streets. The Pilot Village Association, near Senegal's Lac Rose, welcomes more than 100 street children, ages 3 to 25. It's a second chance for these kids to develop autonomy and responsibility through training in carpentry and masonry and counseling about community life. On this morning, Pilot Village co-founder Sharif Ndiaye is explaining the dangers of illegal immigration and the often poor living conditions of African migrants in Europe.
We took in a lot of young people who were migrating from the sub-region. We are offering them this alternative solution of first coming to stay with us in this center and to benefit from the training that we are providing them, which can be a source of income tomorrow.
In Chess, Mohamed Kaba receives a visit from Fatih Diop, who is responsible for professional integration at Pilot Village. She comes every month to support him in managing his budget and opening a bank account, but also to help him better integrate socially by strengthening family ties.
When you see the journey he has had, the ups and downs he has been through, that he now manages to be independent, to be able to take care of himself. He has a small business in Guinea with his mother. He sells shoes. Not only does he take care of himself, but in addition, he helps the family. I think that's something great.
Active for more than 25 years, Pilot Village regularly places nearly 70 young people in jobs every year, helping to contribute to the local economy and discourage illegal migration to Europe. For Alison Lekogo Fernandez in Lac Rose, Senegal, I'm Carol Gunsberg, VOA.
News agencies report the Ethiopian government today offered a $260,000 reward to anyone with information on the location of fugitive leaders of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF. TPLF leaders are believed to be hiding in the mountains of Tigray's region and are believed to be fighting back against federal forces that captured the regional capital, Mekelle, late last month. Thousands of people are believed to have been killed and nearly a million fled their homes during the fighting that began November 4th when the Ethiopian government launched an offensive on Tigray. The government said it was a retaliation for a TPLF attack on federal military facilities. The government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says the operation targeted some TPLF leaders, but the TPLF said it was an attack on all of Tigray's people. The conflict has raised concerns among Ethiopia's international allies about the possible destabilization of Africa's second most populous nation. It's a few days to go before Christmas, but many South Africans say they are not looking forward to the day. Some are mourning the loss of family and friends to COVID-19. With COVID-19 infections currently rapidly rising in South Africa, others say it is too risky to go out and enjoy time with friends. Some say it's a Christmas that has been stolen by COVID-19, so it will come, go, and be forgotten. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Christmas is a time of joy, excitement and parting for many South Africans with the start of summer weather and school holidays. This time of the year, many would be heading to the beaches in Durban, Cape Town and the Eastern Cape province so that come Christmas Day, they can swim in the sea and party until late at night. But COVID-19 has put a stop to that joy, leaving many South Africans sad. All the beaches and public parks in the Eastern Cape province and the Garden Route in the Western Cape are closed. Durban beaches and others in KwaZulu-Natal also have been ordered to close on Christmas Day. The government took the measures in light of the rapidly rising COVID-19 second wave infections. Johannesburg student Denzel Mokwena says it will be a very sad Christmas.
Not normal, you know. We're not used to such a situation, so yeah, that's what I think. Just gonna be chilling with family, playing games. What more can we do? I mean, nothing. Even events, we can't have events to avoid like this thing of COVID because, you know, it has been taking a lot of life, so yeah.
Mangaliso Khumalo, who is not related to this reporter, says her mind is more occupied by fears of COVID-19 than Christmas.
It's going to be hard to adjust to it because we know Christmas time as time to bond with our families. So this Christmas is going to be a short, weird Christmas because we can't have anything lined up with friends with the COVID going on. We can't do anything else. We're still waiting for the vaccine to come through. It will be a bittersweet Christmas.
With over 23,000 people already killed by the pandemic and more than 800,000 infected in South Africa, Tumi Kwabe says it is time to mourn, not celebrate.
Unfortunately, I'm the victim because I lost my friend, my co-worker. So I don't think that we are looking forward for Christmas. You know, everybody's like fearing. We live by grace now. We want to let go because we are panicking. You get shocked. Now what we are facing is sudden death. We saw somebody yesterday. The next thing, the person was not breathing and just passed on.
However, others like Bukosi Chauge say they will not have COVID-19 steal their joy.
I'll try to make it great. We in South Africa, man, will make a plan. We'll always make a plan. It's going to happen. We're going to celebrate Christmas one way or another. Just chill with family and have some nice meals and drinks. That's it.
However, for the thousands who lost their jobs because of COVID-19 control measures, there is simply no money to celebrate with, even if they wanted to. For them, it's a Christmas they may want to quickly forget. Tuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The former president of Burundi, Pierre Buyoyo, has died in Paris at the age of 71. The office of the president, Willy Nyamatwe, today tweeted, "The death of former President Pierre Buyoyo is confirmed. There are unconfirmed reports he had COVID-19 at the time of his death. He was hospitalized in Bamako, where he had been living last week, and then taken to Paris. Buyoyo resigned as an African Union envoy in late November after being sentenced to life imprisonment in Burundi over the 1993 assassination of his successor, which he denounced as politically motivated. Buyoyo, an ethnic Tutsi, came to power in Burundi in a coup in 1987. In 1993, he lost an election to Melchior Ndadaye, a Hutu, but ethnic Tutsi soldiers killed Ndadaye several months later. The death plunged Burundi into years of civil war between the majority Hutus and minority Tutsis. Buyoyo became president again after a coup, ruling from 1996 to 2003. In 2000, he signed the Arusha Accords, aimed at ending the civil war, and he stepped down in 2003 in line with the accords. In Tanzania, female circumcision, also known as female genital mutilation, FGM, is still practiced among some ethnic groups as a rite of passage into womanhood. Many girls are forced into it by family to avoid being shunned and end up scarred for life. To bridge the gap between health and tradition, healthcare nonprofit AMREF has been promoting an alternative for girls. Charles Kombe reports from Tanga, Tanzania.
Margaret Sendeu is 14 years old and says one of her worst memories was when, at the age of 11, she nearly bled to death when she was subjected to FGM. She says nine of them were taken to the ceremonial house where a woman came and started cutting them. The teenager says they bled a lot. She also says some girls were taken to hospitals and others died. She adds that she did not want to go through the procedure and does not wish to see other girls undergoing the circumcision. More than 25% of girls and women have undergone FGM in Tanzania. In rural pastoral communities, many girls are forced to undergo FGM by their parents in the hopes of securing her dowry. Girls who have not gone through it are believed to be more promiscuous. Others are forced to do so in the name of tradition or risk being shunned in their villages. Maria Kunde is Margaret's mother. She says if a girl gets married without having been circumcised, according to Maasai tradition, it's a sin. She says if the husband finds out that the Maasai girl is not circumcised, he rejects her on the ground that she's still a young girl and not a woman. To end the brutal practice, healthcare non-profit AMREF introduced an alternative with safe, traditional rituals to mark and celebrate a girl's initiation into womanhood. The group says more than 15,000 girls have avoided FGM. The AMREF Africa project manager, Aisha Bianuku, explains. Bianuku says, in the alternative passage of age, we follow all their traditions, but we add one segment, teaching the girls about reproductive health and their gender rights. Bianuku also says, we are celebrating together the rite of passage ceremony, but without circumcisions. We are planning to totally remove it. This was also a way to make a living for those who circumcise, by getting money and gifts. AMREF is now providing them with assistance in the form of loans. Among them, Martha Tumbo. Tumbo says when she circumcised a girl, she will get one goat, which was equivalent of 50,000 shillings. But now, Tumbo says, she no longer circumcises. Although the practice is illegal in Tanzania, it takes place in secret in some communities. Faraja Kampambe is a social welfare officer.
Tunakoelekea tatizo linakwenda kupungua, japokuwa sasa.
He says the problem is starting to decrease, but nowadays statistics show that some communities, especially the cow-based communities, have noticed that the government have been strong in fighting these acts. Kampambe adds that in some places, as soon as a girl is born, she is circumcised. Meanwhile, Margaret is celebrating in the same ceremonies that led her into FGM 3 years ago, but is now smiling as more than 450 girls of her age mark their coming of age without undergoing the traditional act. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Tanga, Tanzania.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right after the interview.